It is Susie Ashworth here, and I have a question for you. Would you like to get a copy of my Sunday Times best-selling book, Infinite Receiving, Crack the Code to Conscious Wealth Creation for free? If so, listen up. I am on the biggest of missions. It is my desire that this book gets into the hands of 100,000 humans, which is such a crazy number. It's something like 0.4% of all books that have ever been created will ever sell 100,000 copies. So we are aiming big, and I'm here for it, and I want you to be here for it too. So part of our vision is to make it as easy as possible for you to get hold of this book, for you to share this book with your friends. And so guess what? You can get the book for free. I will pay for it for you. All you need to do is just pay the postage. Yes, you heard that correctly. And what's going to happen when you receive your free book is that I am also going to give you the Infinite Receiving Hypno Activation. So this is designed to work alongside the meditations that you receive in the book. And I want to kickstart your ability to receive more infinitely now. So you get that with the Hypno Activation. You will also receive the exclusive 5-week course that I created to celebrate the launch of Infinite Receiving, the book. And so what you will find is in this condensed course, which actually it's 6 weeks because I've included a Q&A session, which is amazing. What you will find in those weeks is a real deep dive into what I teach in the book. So the value of that is £497. It is amazing. It was such a joy to deliver. And on top of that, you are going to receive 21 days complimentary access to the Infinite Receivers Members Club. So not only am I releasing trainings in there every single month, so depending on what point you join the membership, there will be months and months of trainings that you will be able to access for free in those 21 days. And I also have a channel called Daily Devotion, where I come in every single day and leave you a training. Sometimes it's in the morning, sometimes it's in the evening, sometimes it's in the afternoon. But that training is designed to inspire you, to remind you, to be an anchor for the mindset that you need to have, the lens that you get to look at the world through in order to amplify, elevate, and accelerate your receiving journey. Yeah, it's absolutely wild. You get all of this for free when you say yes to getting the free book. Like literally all you have to do is pay for postage. So I couldn't make it any easier. And what I want you to do is for you to grab a book and for you to tell a friend to grab a book. Let's get this into 100,000 hands. And all you need to do to claim your free book is go to susieashworth.com/book-for-free. That easy. So susieashworth.com/book-for-free to claim your brand new free copy of Infinite Receiving, Crack the Code to Conscious Wealth Creation, and finally manifest your dream life. This is the Infinite Receiving Podcast, helping conscious leaders like you tap into a wealth of abundance across all areas of your life and business. My name is Susie Ashworth. I am a single mom of three and author of the Sunday Times best-selling book, Infinite Receiving, Crack the Code to Conscious Wealth Creation, and Finally Manifest Your Dream Life.
On this show, I'll be sharing with you how you can upgrade your identity and your reality to create the life that you have been dreaming of. Because you are ready to be an infinite receiver.
Hello, 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 you gorgeous human being. It is Susie Ashworth here, and you are listening to the Infinite Receiving Podcast. And I have got a juicy one for you today. I am really excited to bring to you somebody that I was first introduced to like years and years and years and years ago, actually, through my love of a magazine called Psychologies. And it was a really big deal when this magazine launched. I was over at EMAP and I was working on a 50 plus magazine called Heyday, which never really made it into a big deal. But I remember when Psychologies launched and we saw that as like a glossy, beautiful, we looked at it as like a 40 plus magazine, and you were doing really different things. It was a glossy, but it was mindset and personal development led, and it felt new and edgy and exciting. And you captained the ship of that magazine for a very long time. So that was my first awareness of who you were. And it is a great honor and a privilege now to have you on the podcast. So welcome to Infinite Receiving, Susie Walker.
Hello, hello, Susie Ashworth. I mean, you've been on our radar forever because we were featuring you or talking about you probably maybe 4 or 5 years ago. When did you first start? When did you come on the scene?
Well, for coaching, it was 10 years ago, but I remember maybe just before, or maybe it was during the pandemic, you did an online series. Yeah. And I came and did some stuff on Facebook for you. And that was like, oh my God, yeah. I'm doing this for Psychologies magazine.
We started our own TV show, didn't we, on Facebook Live on those weird, strange days. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So that's when I got to know you more. Yes.
I am curious. Have you always been a writer, a storyteller?
I became a journalist in 1996. Before that, I had a normal job and I was a transition manager for a company in Leeds. And I had a moment of, this is not what I want to do. And I went to London. I literally tied a handkerchief on my stick and said, right, I'm going to London. I'm going to go and make my fortune and become a writer. I'm going to follow my dream. And landed in London and did a 3-month magazine journalist course. I had a degree, but I'd had no training really. So I did a 3-month course and then just literally started freelancing and got my first article published in She magazine. And then one of the tabloids picked up a story that I'd written, and that was it. And I started to freelance, and then I did really live the dream for me, was writing for a living, you know, using your art or using your creativity to actually make a living and earn money was, to me, it was just such a joy. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then I found coaching, and that was amazing. And then when I put the two together, that's kind of how I ended up eventually at Psychologies, because I was a journalist, but also I was passionate about self-development and the power to transform our lives. But yeah, writing has always been my passion. It's the thing that's always saved me, the thing that lights me up. Storytelling, I see it, you know, from your book to, you know, novels, they have the power to lift you up when you feel in the depths of despair. So for me, stories are everything.
Can you remember the first thing that you wrote, like as a story, maybe as a child?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, I used to write plays when I was probably 7 or 8. And I used to write plays in a notebook. And that's what I used to do in my spare time. So we lived on a kind of school for naughty boys, where my dad was a lecturer, where it was kids in care, basically. So we were in the kind of the staff housing. And my mum and dad had bought a tiny little house in Scotland. And we were constantly going up and down the A1 trying to do this house up. We didn't have much money. And I used to spend a lot of time alone, and I would just sit in the garden and write stories. So it was my thing, a way of entertaining myself.
I have
an 11-year-old, and she is always writing stories. And it's interesting how much life imitates art, as well as her own imagination that gets sparked. I'm conscious that I don't want to project onto her. And at the same time, I'm like, maybe this is your thing. You said that writing and storytelling has saved you. When was the first time it saved you?
So when I was young, when I was a teenager, my parents died. My dad died of cancer. My mom died. It took about 8 years for my dad to die of cancer and about 6 months for my mom to die of cancer. So very early on, I lost them. And for me, writing about it and journaling about it just helped me make sense of it, gave me comfort, I used to literally, I didn't know that that's what I was doing at the time, but I was journaling and I was trying to find a way. I was almost like my own coach, going, it's going to be okay, we're going to find a way, okay, this is what you're going to do tomorrow. And that's literally what I did. And also, yeah, I used to write stories about how people would be healed and would magically come back to life, and I would write letters to my parents and get messages back. So for me, it was in a kind of, I suppose, now I look back and think, yeah, in a time of intense trauma, I found a way through my imagination and my creativity to reconnect with myself and reconnect with them. So it was a really big deal for me. It's like, I mean, imagine if you didn't have that. What do people do if you haven't got that, and how disconnected you would feel, or alone you would feel? And using my imagination was everything at that point.
How old were you?
I was 17 when my dad died, and 9 when my mom died.
Yeah. Wow.
So very early on.
Yeah. And how do you think that that shaped you and your outlook on life?
Yeah, I suppose I realize how much it has shaped me. But I think it's so funny that we're talking in psychologies, and because I feel like, I mean, you've got a very moving backstory as well. And I don't know how, when you came to realize what an impact that did have on you. So, I mean, I'm 55 now. And it's only about recently that I've thought, wow, that was quite a big deal. And the other thing I did was I read self-help books. I was kind of reading, funnily enough, Louise Hay when my dad was not well. And I was saying, no, Dad, if we do these affirmations, everything will be all right. And so I used self-development as well, all those kind of books, you know, Anthony Robbins, Wake a Giant Within, you know, all of these really big books. And I used to sort of take the quotes from them, I used to put them on my kitchen cupboards. I used to try and kind of imbue myself with positivity and can do. But what I realize now is, you know, as I look back, is there was no choice other than to keep going forward. I thought, if I'm going to keep going forward, I can either do it in despair or I can do it in a positive way. And again, creativity first and self-development second. Those are the things that allowed me to kind of move forward in my life, which is kind of what I've made my life about now, which has always been about that, which is psychology. I was so passionate about creating a magazine that could inspire people and could be a hand to hold when everything went dark. You know, there isn't one way, as we know, there's not one way out of the despair, but there are many ways. And here are 10,000 million ways in one magazine to find yourself, not only to survive, but to thrive. So I think I learned that at the coalface. I learned that, how to do that. And I know that it works. And I managed to climb out of the pit of despair and build a successful life for myself. And by successful, I mean, you know, I got married and managed to, against the odds, have a child. It took me a long time to have a child and, you know, built a career that I actually wanted. You know, that wasn't working for a translation agency. It was actually making a living from writing. So it made me just go for it.
I think that's it. It makes me feel very emotional listening to you, because there are so many resonant pieces with your story and mine. And I was going to ask you, what gave you the audacity to take your stick with the author flag on and be like, oh, I'm going to London? But this, for me, what I resonate with is that desire to live life. When you are shown how quickly life can be taken away from you, when you are faced with the mortality of the people that you love the most, it can't help but make you think about how am I living life or how am I going to live life? And that question you ask, like, what would you do if you didn't have that outlet? I think that that's what we observe in people who have experienced similar tragedies, but have very, very different trajectories when they don't have coaching, when they don't have creativity, when they don't have or unable to find support to channel their grief and their fear and their anger and their rage and everything that comes along with the seemingly unfair experience of life. Do you think of life as fair and unfair?
Well, I think for me, how I see it is more, how can I trust life now? A lot of my journey, and still to this day, I can get very triggered still of, I've got to trust in this. So it's not rather than fair and unfair, but how am I supposed to trust life now? And then, of course, you can't. So as in, you never know what's going to happen. There's no guarantees. There's no certainty. But what you can trust in is love, turning up and doing the best you can. And, you know, if you can't change things, how can you kind of be with it in the healthiest way possible and all of those things. So it's finding a way for you to navigate life. I think a lot of the self-development for me was very much about kind of finding a place where I could be safe again. Mm-hmm. You know, that I could be, things could be right. I'll be happy when, I'll be safe when. And what I realized is that being in the present is all we've got, really. And then it's about how to, you know, use all the tools that we know with coaching, etc., to try and smile when you're being completely triggered left, right, and center. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to react now. I'll journal about this later and it's going to be fine. But right now, just stay present with what it is. It's all of that sort of thing, which I'm so disappointed in, because I was sure that there must be something I could do or learn or be or do that could give me that level of certainty. And oh no, there isn't. But in a way, that's incredibly liberating. There is no there. There is no there that we're going to get to that will make everything right.
You said that you received messages back from your parents. Was this you channeling or you literally making up what you think that they would have said?
Okay, I don't know what the right answer to that is. So how I explain it is that it's my imagination, it's my intuition. And sometimes, you know, whether you, I call it the force, when you're wanting to channel the force through you. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had to go to my wiser self. I just will journal and I go, I've got all this triggering. Oh, okay, wise self, come on, help me. So again, I think probably I learned that as a teenager, what I was perhaps doing was channeling the force, channeling my parents, the loving, kindest version of, babes, you can do this, you got this, right? What we're going to do. And it was very practical as well. My dad was like, okay, what you need to do is find out how to bury me or whatever it was. You know what I mean? It was very kind of a practical thing as well as an emotional thing, which again, to this day, I use. Sometimes I'm not the most practical of people, and that's the piece I need most help with, is like, how do I fix this? What are the baby steps to get here? And again, journaling, or I don't know whether it is channeling. I don't know if that's true, but I see it as more as a deep dive into the force, into the universal flow of wisdom. And that I can trust.
Is the force God?
Well, some people call it God. I mean, I'm a Buddhist. So me, this kind of idea that there is a universal energy, aligned with that universal energy, then all will be well. It's getting yourself out of the way, your ego, your thoughts, all of those things. And, you know, and that's a whole journey to go on. So the force is, to me, it's aligning with the energy that is everything. So yes, I mean, some people would call that God.
Yeah. Again, I think, although it was always spiritual, actually, I asked to be christened at the age of 8, which for me feels, when I reflect on like my youngest daughter, who's going to be 8, if she said to me today, like, Mum, can I be christened? I'd be like, that's weird. So I've always been spiritual, but losing my parents at that early age, I needed something. And yeah, I think that life has confirmed to me many times over that there is something bigger than myself at play. And that's very comforting. And for me, actually, that's enough. It's like, I'm going to have a thought. Is a thought going to serve me or is it going to hold me back? That is a thought that serves me outside of whatever evidence I believe that I have witnessed and experienced. So I'm going to go with that.
Do you have a practice?
Meditation, journaling. Now, as I get older, being in nature, being by the sea, very, very important to me. And what's very interesting right now is that I have just started reading a book called Mary Magdalene Revealed. And it's quite difficult for me to read that book now without crying. It really, they're just tears flow.
Tell me about what the book is about and why we started reading it now.
Look at this, Susie. You can take the journalist out of the journalist seat.
We can talk about spirituality or the journey. I sometimes feel so lonely about that because it's difficult to talk to people about your spiritual journey and what works in a very authentic way.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to know.
Yeah. Well, this book is about one of the missing gospels and Mary Magdalene's gospel and her version of Christianity. And I think what is very powerful about this is that really it's talking about her lens. It's talking about Jesus Christ and her lens of Christianity, which is very different from the Christianity that we were sold, or in the books is the Christianity that was won out. And this is very much about the divine feminine, women in their power, feminism, maybe the original feminism in its first instance. It's talking about some of the other key female players. One woman called Thelke, who baptized herself because she realized she had the power to do that. I don't know why I'm crying when I read it, but the tears just, I'm not sobbing, but there is something that is activated in my body as I read the words and the tears are just flowing. Interestingly enough, I bought this book. It's on my Kindle. I've highlighted some of the passages, but when I bought it originally, I obviously wasn't ready for it. So, you know, I didn't get through it. But there was a conversation that I witnessed between my friend Emily Fletcher and a woman called Blue of Earth on Emily's podcast called Why Isn't Everybody Doing This? And she talked very passionately about Mary Magdalene and why is she referred to as a whore? Why did they reduce her to a whore? And what was interesting is as I was reading this, I thought, she is all women. She says in one of the verses, I am the unholy and the sacred. And what I thought would have been a, for want of a better word, a better observation from Blue is, why did they reduce her to only a whore? Because she was all things to Jesus. So, yeah. And as I said, when we were off air, I feel like I'm in a transitionary period and I feel like part of the transition is another level of creativity that is being called from me, which is, for me, sits very much in the feminine. So it's another layer of receiving, another layer of creativity. And that is all about the feminine, which is probably why this book and the most divine of feminine archetypes is speaking to me right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think that might be for you, this next layer of creativity? Is it fiction?
I think it's truth. I think it's more of myself. I think it's a fullness. Yeah, that's what I think.
Wonderful.
And we shall see. When was the second time that writing and telling stories saved you?
So I went with my knotted handkerchief to try and get into a journalistic college. And it was a big kind of group of people. And they said, okay, you've got to do this spelling test and do that. And then they said, oh, can this small amount of people go into the next room? And I said, oh, not many people have got in. And they said to me, oh, I'm sorry, your standard of English isn't high enough to get on the course. And I was like, what? And I was devastated. I mean, I had a whole lot of I'm not good enough stuff that went on anyway. And that just confirmed all, you know, I think I manifested it. But anyway, I wrote them a story. I sent them a kind of a story about my hometown and this, blah, blah, blah. And they basically wrote back to me and said, okay, well, you know, we can teach you how to spell, but you can obviously write really well and we'd love you to be on our course.
So, wow.
So I think there's a piece about don't be kind of held down by telling you can't spell, or, you know, use your creativity to open doors for you. Don't give up. It's never been easy for me to write. I find it really difficult. Like, it doesn't flow. I don't like.
Oh.
But once I've written and finished something, I'm like, this is what I was made for. This is just so wonderful and I love it. But I think there's something about putting something together, isn't there, creating a story that is very powerful. So I think for me, being determined and kind of standing by, not being turned away, not being told that I couldn't be part of that world. I mean, now I've been in that world can be quite kicky and, you know, it's who you know. And I mean, I literally didn't know anyone, didn't know anything. And so I take great faith from that, because it's that idea of you don't need to know everybody. It is a lot of hard work and opening doors and doing it. It's possible. It is possible. I mean, you must know that as well.
I do know that. I think that that is how I have lived my entire life. When you share, the word that comes up is courageous. And I suppose I was reflecting on the fact that it was courageous to go to London. Had you decided that it was not an option for you to not be a writer?
Well, I was being really codependent with my husband at the time. And I was saying, oh, you go and live your dreams. You be a musician. You go and learn how to play the saxophone. And so he did. And then I sat in the audience and I watched him. And I didn't feel pride or love. I felt envy. And I was like, oh, my God, what is this? What is this disgusting emotion? I should be loving and kind. I thought, oh, my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
What am I doing? And I just came and I said, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to London to become a journalist. And he said, what? Well, I'm not going from Leeds. He said, well, I am. And he did come with me and we went on to, you know, live together in London for a long time and had a child together. But it was actually rank codependency, trying to tell out somebody else to live their dreams. And that made me so envious, that made me so kind of resentful. That was my wake-up call. And unfortunately, I know that's not a very nice story, but it's true.
I think that that story is going to speak to so many people. I think that how that plays out, how it has played out for many people that will be listening, is parents have tried to live vicariously through their children. And then I think that there are also many people who are listening to this now who know that they give the best advice, who know that they can trot out everything that they have read from a self-help book for the last 15 years, and who also know that they are not living it. They are not doing it because they are afraid or feel shackled or have just decided that it's not their time. And I think so much of my mission and vision is for people to wake up to the fact that we get one shot in this body. So let's go.
And I think there's two pieces to it, isn't it? So that's exciting. So we had, it sounds awful, doesn't it? It's like, oh, we're going to use our backgrounds, but it's true. You know, when you lose your parents at a young age, you go like, let's just go, let's just, because there isn't a lot of time, let's make it happen, let's work at it, blah, 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 and you go. And in a way, that leap, a lot of my work is all about leap, heart leap, big leap, I wrote all of these things, but almost I find the leap in the easy bit, being brave, like, hey, come on. And the hard bit is once you've leapt and your
sustainability.
Yeah, and just keeping going. And when you really doubt yourself, when it doesn't go right, doesn't go well, which, it goes up and down all the time. And sometimes it's in those dark moments when you are rejected, when, it doesn't go well, to keep the faith, to keep going. So I think there's courage and there's also persistence. That is the kind of, for me, that has been the winning formula. Keep going.
The sweet spot. I'm drawn, as we're talking, to your background, and there's just a whole sea of colours and textures. And I was literally, before our conversation, talking about what it would mean to live your life as the artist and the artist archetype. And for me, as I look at your living room, I feel like that is what you embody. Does that resonate with you? Do you?
Oh, well, that's so beautiful for you to say that, but no, I don't feel that at all. So for me, and it's really weird, I've sort of made this, my next leap that I've made is I've moved to Northumberland, which is on the, it's beautiful, kind of just below Scotland, amazing, to kind of create a new post by Somwich University. Mm. So my family, I can't bear it, honestly. Brace yourself, because it's so hard when they go. So I'm reinventing myself again. And with things that I keep getting drawn to, I mean, they are literally artists in Northumberland. So I've been trying to find my crowd of writers. And I love my writers here, but the artists are so amazing. So that picture you can see, I painted it. So I've been
amazing.
Painting it, and it's so exciting. So there's something, you know, you talk about channeling, you talk about the kind of divine feminine. Mm. And I think there is this, I don't know, it is a spiritual path now, isn't it? It feels like to a great honor. So when it, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert, who's one of my favorite wonderful writers who wrote Big Magic and Eat, Pray, Love, but she talks about, you know, you're being visited by ideas. Mm. We need to do something with them. Do you know what I mean? We need to get them out. Yeah. And I'm so full of ideas all the time. And it's trying to find these places, whether it's stories in the press or fiction or painting pictures. So I feel it's lovely that you said that. So great. Maybe I am going to embody the archetype of an artist. I love that. Right. I'm doing it, Susie.
The thing is that I view you as an artist because of your writing anyway. I just noticed how much more effervescence there is also in your living environment. Do you not see your writing as art?
Not journalism. I mean, I've written a couple of books, but they're self-help. I said not self-help, but I would like to write. I'd like to write fiction. Okay. So that's what I'm working on right now. So that's my transition. I'm also in transition, but obviously I'm earning a living, and I love hearing about people's stories, and it's so interesting, and I'm naturally curious about other people. You know, other people's stories saved me. It is possible to, you know, to overcome adversity. Mm-hmm. And our self-developed world is full of people like us who have struggled and suffered and have created amazing lives for themselves. And I find to be in that world, that's my world. That's what all I write about. So for me, it's like amazing. So I have this very strong belief system that we're all doing it. So I find it almost really hard when I'm with people who are like, oh, well, you don't know how hard it is. And I'll and of course, I'm not saying shit happens, doesn't it? I mean, you happen, but and what are you going to do with it? Sometimes I don't realize how almost skewed in terms of my mindset is. It's kind of an exciting place to be, but I still get, you know, attacked by doubt and is that possible and all of those things. But now I recognize it for what it is. It's like, just those voices again.
So you said that much of your life is governed by this idea of leaping. And I'm curious for you, what is your process for making a big leap?
I mean, often I am motivated to leap through misery. I notice, I'm really noticing like, oh my God, what is that? And it's such a horrible emotion to feel. Mm-hmm. I've got a lovely, very, very talented friend who got another book published. And I'm trying to smile and my lip is sticking to my teeth. And I say, I'm so envious of you. And he's like, well, get on with it. I mean, don't run away from your emotions. Listen to what they are telling you something. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing, is listen and then say, what is it? What actually do you want? And you do it so well in the book. Mm-hmm. Make it so specific about what is it that you want. Put a number on it, or, you know, I've come to Northumberland and started a story festival. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Anne Cleves and Val McDermott, these massive £30 million, you know, 30 million books. And I was watching them and I was thinking, I want to do that. I want to know how to do, you know, LJ Ross, another amazing author, sold more books than Harry Potter. And she got this foundation. And I'm thinking, I want to help other people and literacy and because that gives us power. And this is why I love your work, because it's not about money for money's sake. It's like about empowering ourselves to help not only ourselves, but for other people as well. Mm. So, okay. So the next thing is, what do you want? And then it's, what do you need to believe about yourself to attract that, and then take action, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you know, you can have the dips along the way and it's really hard, and but just, you know, it's just the dip, and then finding the ways to kind of boost yourself when you're feeling a bit low, or when you're overwhelmed by emotion, or when you get doubt comes in or whatever, because it's all messages and it can take you in the right direction if you can frame it like that. It's like, you know, when all the doors remain closed, it's like, okay, what's this telling me? If that's all closed that way, which way do I go? And it's kind of knowing whether to keep going, keep battering down the door, around, and you get around the back door. It's all finding a way to keep going in a positive direction that is, feels like not giving up.
How do you know when to pivot and try and get around the back versus what you did when you first went to London, which is, hang on a minute, I'm getting on this course, I'm going to write them a story and I'm going to let them see who I am. How do you know?
It's a great question. I think you don't know. Well, it's a kind of refusal to be, one, know your place. You know, I think there's a lot of people in this world will want to keep you in a place, you know, stay there. You're not coming into our world. So know it for what it is. And then I think it's just bloody determination of, no, I'm going to find a way to do that. And it's finding a way to make it happen, isn't it? It's finding the resources for you to decide, I'm going to do that. I think sometimes, you know, when you think, oh, well, can't be bothered. If you don't really want it enough, you'll give up. Yeah. I think you will. It's wrongly aligned. I mean, you know, you talk about living through your kids, you know, so, oh my God, trying to get my son to read a book, you know, that was my thing. Stories was my thing. So he would not read a book, write terrible, wouldn't put cups of letters on. And that was when he was 16. You know what I mean? They said he wasn't even going to get an OLED to GCSE, all of this thing. And then he's turned out to be a filmmaker. He's turned out to be a storyteller on film. And I was a single parent. I always feel so guilty.
Yes.
You know, I'm so exhausted that I would sit with him on the sofa and we'd watch films and Harry Potter and blah, 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 and do on the sofa. So he is a storyteller, but not in words. It's not his thing. So, yeah, it's interesting. So it might not have been in journalism, but it might have been about filmmaking, whatever it's. But you know when you're good at something. You do know. It's like you keep going because it's the thing that you do when you don't get paid for it. I used to write stories all the time without being paid for it. So what do you do? Then that's what you should be doing, basically. Not get paid for it, but finding what that thing is that you do anyway.
Yeah, I agree. That enables you to live, you know. So I am curious, actually, about your journey with Buddhism. Was that a big leap for you as well?
No, it's been a slow journey. That hasn't been a leap at all. I mean, because of my job at Psychologies, I've read so many books from all sorts of authors. And there was one particular book by a Buddhist nun called Pema Chodron, When Things Fall Apart. And I was obsessed by her and her work and her words and her wisdom. And then there's so much around the kind of the divine feminine, actually, in Buddhism, and reading about that. And it's a kind of an old ancient system that's been around a long time. And it's the one thing that kind of made sense to me in a lot of ways. So I went to a workshop, a Zen Ways workshop, where I just sit on a chair for 16 hours for 14 days saying, who am I?
Wow. Only that.
Opposite somebody saying, who am I? And oh my goodness, it was awful. But actually, the irony is that you're telling all these stories all the time. And the person, obviously, you're telling stories. And I'm a little bit deaf. And I couldn't exactly hear everything they were saying. But their shoulders are going, they're sobbing, and they're blah, 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 and you're like, oh my God, I can't really hear what they're saying. But we give us such a hard time. And I was doing the same, sobbing, oh, you understand, this is who I am. And by about, you know, second day, you're exhausted, you're knackered. And then you realize, I'm not my stories.
Yeah.
The question is, if you're not your stories, which I've spent my whole life doing about, I am my story, who are you? And who are you is, you know, if you can get beyond your stories, you are the force. Because the self-development stories can be great, aren't they? So obviously, you come often with those negative stories, but then I think because I've been working on, you know, these stories since I was a teenager, I've got some really positive stories. But even that is, you know,
it's a lie.
So it's just aligning with this kind of, well, whatever you want to call that energy. And when you align with that, almost like the stories actually drop away. it sounds a bit strange. And that for me made, it kind of made sense of everything. And I was like, okay. And then from that place, I write stories. So I'm not quite sure what that all means. But yeah, so Buddhism just appealed to me and it made sense to me. And it gives me a practice of meditation. Mm-hmm. I love reading and, you know, the kind of the ideas of compassion and mm-hmm. it all makes sense to me. So I loved it. And I'm really interested in sort of reading. I've just got another book, 7 Years in Tibet. I was reading that the other day and I managed to meet the Dalai Lama. Which was
wow.
I know, amazing, amazing. So yeah, it just resonated and my heart went yes. And I, you know, to find a spiritual path, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So I want the company, I want the structure, I want the, you know, advice that seems to come from a very wise place. So that's helped me.
Do you go to temple?
Well, I do it online.
Okay.
And the Zen Ways, they have it every sort of Sunday online. So I don't, not every Sunday, but it's a way of me kind of communing and talking and mixing with people, isn't it? And being able to talk about things. So, yeah.
This is very interesting. I imagine that if I met the Dalai Lama, I would probably cry instantly.
Yeah.
Because I imagine him being able to radiate love, which creates that sense of safety, which creates that sense of belonging. And I appreciate that this is all my imagination. So I'm curious, you said it was fantastic, but tell me, how was it for you when you met him? How did it feel?
Actually, he's really ordinary. You expect, as you say, I also sort of feel like it's you're going to meet God, basically. Yeah. It feels like that. But actually, he was just a really humble, ordinary man, you know, and halfway through something, he was like, oh, I'm just too tired now. And can I have a cup of tea? It's just really normal, a normal person. But at the same time, there was a magic about him. But I don't know whether that's in your imagination, but it's, I don't know, it just felt authentic, real. It didn't feel like, you know, it's almost like, you know, you expect to meet the Wizard of Oz, you know, but he doesn't present as the big all wise. He is just this lovely, kind, warm person that was very, very present. He was very present with you. He was almost childlike. That's what it felt like. He was childlike. It was like hanging out with a very, very wise child.
Yeah. I love that so much. I wonder, have you ever met Eckhart Tolle?
No, I haven't. And I would have loved to. He was one that I didn't manage to get to speak to, but I would love to speak to him, really, massively.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the power of now was so kind of so extraordinary when that came out. Yeah. No, but no, I haven't met him.
My favorite book is actually A New Earth. That book resonated with me more than Power of Now, because I read The Power of Now probably when it first came out, and it was just, again, I just wasn't ready for it, whereas A New Earth blew my mind.
Why?
Do you know what, I need to reread it, because I can't honestly tell you why, outside of it made sense to me, his view of the world and who we are in the world and what stops us from our connection with our divinity. It all made sense. It was like a cellular rearrangement. And then maybe in the last 3, 4, maybe 5 years, I revisited The Power of Now and I was like, oh my God. So it's all about timing, I think, with all of these messages and messengers.
I agree. And as you say, there's some books that kind of blow you away at the time and then you can't remember what they were about again, but because you did on the next bit of your journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the person who had the most profound impact on your way of looking at life that you met through psychologies?
So difficult to say. I think my favorite story is Oprah. I mean,
I didn't know that.
She was absolutely amazing. It was only on the phone, but we were waiting to get this interview and we didn't know we would get it. And then we went on a Christmas do. We were all sitting there at the restaurant and then we got the call. It was like, Oprah, we'll see you now. It was on the phone. And I was like, oh my God, we were in the middle of London. So I went, ran up to the big office building and I said, can I borrow an office? I've got Oprah. And they were like, okay. And they put me in the boardroom. And it was like this boardroom that overlooked the whole of London. Mm. And then I had this kind of headset on and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, it took 15 minutes for me to be popped through to her. I was like, oh, we'll see you now. And we're just, this is Chicago. And, blah, blah, blah. And it was, I can't do the accents. But anyway, and then finally, after 15 minutes, she came on the line. It's like, hello, this is Oprah. And she was just amazing. Because, you know, she suffered such tragedy in her early life. Such an incredible woman. And, you know, and she was a journalist to start off. So she was just my absolute hero, you know, absolute hero. And then when I got to speak to her, she was just so lovely. You only had 10 minutes. They said we were on for at least 45 minutes. And she was giving me advice about being a single parent. And she was just amazing. I was, you know, they say, be careful, don't meet your heroes. But that was one of the best things. So she was wise. She'd listened. She was asking questions. It was like a proper conversation. I mean, I literally got an audience with Oprah for 45 minutes. It was amazing. It was her, but she was talking about her films, Selma. She was just brilliant. And then the other one is Brené Brown. We did a couple of podcasts with, I mean, tough cookie. I mean, so scary. She's like such a brain. Do you know what I mean? You've got to be on it and you've got to be really concentrating. And I'm a little bit all over the place, ADHD and all of this. And she's just like really laser focused and no bullshit. Do you know what I mean? Just straight there. But she was, again, so refreshing to be around someone so clear. And so inspiring and so able to talk about her own vulnerability. It's a very compelling, attractive thing. You know, she's got the research, but it's also who she is.
When you say intimidating, no bullshit, like straight down the line, what was it? Was it her requests? Is it her presence? What was it about her that makes you say that?
She challenges you in the interview. So I would say, yeah, I've had a little bit of therapy. How much therapy have you had? What do you mean? Da, da, da. Well, I might have had a few problems. Like, what do you mean? Da, da, da. I'm like, and it's almost, I don't know whether I want to be that vulnerable, but the invitation is to be really, really vulnerable with her. So it's like you're being vulnerable with her. And that is challenging. It's almost taking your professional mask off and you're in the room with someone who it's a direct invitation to be vulnerable. And sometimes if you weren't expecting that as a journalist, you especially, you know, at Psychologies, we used to get these celebrity covers and you know, I was lucky enough to do some interviews, but they're never real. They just feel it's very PR fluff and you never ever get anything that you feel, oh, well, maybe it was just me as a journalist, but you know, they're very careful about what they say. They're very managed. Brené Brown, she's just so real and authentic and it just feels so refreshing. So Oprah was much softer and kinder, and not that Brené Brown's unkind, but it was softer. With Brené, it's just like so powerful. Feels so powerful that you come away yearning to be more authentic. Yearning to be more able to be brave and say how it is. Yeah.
Did it change you? Did you become more authentic?
Yeah, I did. I did, and I do. And again, with the magazine, I didn't know how to be the editor of a magazine. And at the first, I was just winging it. Do you know what I mean? I didn't know. I'd been a journalist, but I'd never been an editor. And eventually, you know, through these kind of interviews with Brené, I used to say, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? Like, yeah, okay. And they would get behind me and they would, I mean, it could have gone horribly wrong. They might not have done, but they did. I had an amazing team. So I think it takes a lot of courage to be that vulnerable of admitting, especially in a professional environment, that you don't know what you're doing at the beginning. And even then, you know what I mean? The journalistic world was moving so quickly. You know, it wasn't just enough to do a magazine. We had to do events. We had to do TV shows. We had to do podcasts. We had to learn all that things. And I just didn't know how to do it. So always saying, I don't know, can you help me? It was a great thing to learn.
Was it also your intuition that guided you through that journey, made it work?
completely my intuition. I mean, it's so I think what I learned is when I lost a parent, it's that kind of thing of he's winging it. You have no idea how to live your life. You don't know how to open a bank account. You don't know how to bury someone. You don't know, you know, anything. So you can get the information, but then you just wing it. It's like, and then I learned that do say to my friends all the time, do the face, which is just look like you know what you're doing. And people assume you know what you're doing.
It's true.
It is. It's so funny. But then you go, I don't know what I'm doing. Can you help me with this? What do I need to do? So I progress from not knowing what I do to say, I don't know what I'm doing. Can you help me? And then you become competent. It's all that model, isn't it? Becoming unconsciously competent. So yeah, I think the more authentic and vulnerable we can be, I mean, it can go horribly wrong if you're in the wrong environment, you know, but I've been really lucky to have environments that people have been very supportive to me.
I would argue that if you are in the wrong environment, then, and it all goes, in inverted commas, horribly wrong, it's actually going horribly right for you. You should not be in that environment. And that's not about you choosing to never be vulnerable again, although I do appreciate that people can go down that route. It's not the vulnerability that killed you. It was the fact that you ignored so many signs, ignored your intuition, did what you thought that you should do instead of what it is that you actually wanted to do. That's what has got you into this position. So thank yourself for, you know, making enough missteps to finally get the wake-up call.
Yeah, I think that's, as you say, as we were talking about earlier, that kind of, when you're getting those negative feelings, you know, they're kind of, imposter syndrome, I don't know what it is, or just yuck, you know, that person, I can't trust that person, or that person's not got my back. Trust it. Trust your intuition. So as you say, it's not about not being vulnerable. It's just trust your intuition and find a way through.
How long have you been doing the Literary Festival?
This is our second year we've just done.
Okay. How much of that feels like feeling your way through and just...
My God. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I literally had no idea. It was a conversation in a pub. I said, oh, you should start a book festival. And the mayor of Alnwick said to me, no, you do it. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it then. Not having any idea what I was doing. And that was quite hairy the first year. But we just in the second year and it was much more slick. I had lots of help and people to help me. So it was good. But again, it's that constantly growing, constantly learning. And that's what life is all about, isn't it? That's what I believe is just say yes and make it happen. As long as it lights you up and you feel excited about it, just do it. And yeah, and then and just like in when you're writing something or writing about, you know, this feeling, you think, I can't do it. I can't get there. I remember the festivals in February, beginning of January, I just thought, I just can't do all of this.
Yeah,
I can't do it. There's just too much. And so I've got to just keep going. And it's the same, you know, when you're in the middle of a book, isn't it? You've got bits of paper everywhere. I can't keep it all in my head.
It's not supposed to be all in your head.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be on the page. This feels like a beautiful place to segue into my last guest questions. Same questions that I ask all of my beautiful humans that come on. First question is, what does infinite receiving mean to you, Susie?
It's feeling that you can handle it, you know, going back to our lovely Louise Hay, or is it Susan Jeffers? But it's just no matter what happens, you can handle it. So for me, it's infinite receiving is you're going to receive everything. And it's having faith and trust that you can handle it, whatever that looks like.
Are you good at it?
Sometimes not in the moment, but I'm in the moment, sometimes I can get really overwhelmed and want to freak out. I've learned to do the face, like do the face and okay. And then I know how to process it now. So coaching or therapy or journaling mostly now. But yeah, I'm better at it.
Where in your life or who in your life could you allow to love you just a little bit more?
Oh, well, I've just got a new boyfriend. Terrifying. Can I just say how terrifying that is? That is just so terrifying. And he is so nice to me. And I'm just like, yeah, all right. So can you move on now? No more compliments. So I could definitely sort of sit and try and listen for the compliments. But I find it really hard.
Okay. Well, that's your homework to receive his compliments.
Yeah.
Thank you. What is your greatest attribute?
my enthusiasm. I'm very enthusiastic. I genuinely love hearing about ideas and I can see the possibilities and everything. And I didn't know that that was a thing. I didn't know that not everyone was enthusiastic. And then people say, you're very enthusiastic. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, but it's not a fake. It's just, that's how I am. Mm-hmm. I'm very enthusiastic about people and projects and I love it.
What are you consciously working on manifesting right now?
So I've got a new heart leap. My Substack is called Heart Leap. And I am 18 away from 1,000 signups.
Amazing.
So a year, I'd set myself a goal a year ago of getting 1,000 signups. And I'm nearly there, 18 months. So yeah.
Final question, where can you allow yourself to be more supported in your life right now?
Well, again, interesting question. I had a coaching session yesterday for me and I am trying to access my own. So it's being supported by myself and I'm calling my inner ops person, someone to be the operations and to run my life for me. So the first thing I need to do is do it for myself in a way of not dismissing it and thinking, okay, I don't need to go shopping for food or whatever it is. Be really clear about what it is I need. And then maybe it'll be easier for me to ask what I need in my own life. Yeah. From other people. Maybe the boyfriend can go shopping.
Or tell him that too. This has been such a beautiful conversation. Thank you so much for your time and your energy and your heart. I deeply appreciate it. Please tell the listeners where they can subscribe to your Substack and anywhere else they can find you in the world, please.
Okay, so no, everyone just needs to go to my Substack. That's my new passion, my new thing, which is a kind of a self-development and writing website. So if you want to write a story on Substack or a book or a fiction book or a non-fiction book, then come. We do a writing hour twice a week. So it's Heartleap at Substack. So just come and just put Heartleap Substack in and it'll come up.
Amazing. Thank you so, so much, Susie.
This has been a joy. It's been such a joy to talk to you. I want to keep talking.
I agree. Thank you. Mwah, you're amazing.
Lots of love.
Thank you for listening to Infinite Receiving with me, Susie Ashworth. I'd love to share with you my Infinite Receiving activation audio. Go to susieashworth.com/activateinfiniteReceiving.